What's going on, guys? Thanks for tuning into the Local Crown Podcast, where we're going to teach you how to wage war on your competition and earn your local crown, also known as the top spot on Google.
What is up, Local Crown entrepreneurs? I am your host, Anthony Hanlon, and today I have with me Steve Anderson, and we are going to talk a ton about building a business, growth, crazy exponential growth with Amazon and Jeff Bezos. Super excited. I'm going to hand it over to you, Steve. Where did you get your experience? Where did you get your startup, and how'd you get into what you're doing today?
So my experience actually is the insurance industry. So long time ago, started in that, worked selling insurance and working in independent insurance agencies. For the last 25 years, I've focused on technology and how that segment of entrepreneurs, because that's what they are, can use, should use everything, you know, again, 25 years, right? Lots of technology changes going on, everything from social or websites to marketing and automation and all those kinds of things. And kind of during that, I still had this idea of the impact of technology on them, and then have expanded that a bit more and came up with this idea that the biggest risk business faces today is actually not taking enough risk. And it's the idea that technology is changing so rapidly that we don't have the time we used to, you know, 5, 10, or even 15 years ago, to sit back, oh, I don't know if this is going to be anything or if I should pay attention to that. And so I started researching, right, companies that had succeeded and companies that hadn't. Lots of companies that were great big companies at one point are no longer around. And so what happened? And why are the ones that are continuing to be successful, why? And that's, you know, again, the ones that haven't are kind of easy. Kodak, BlackBerry, Blockbuster, Sears, CompUSA. I mean, there's a whole list of companies that were in at one point very successful and then weren't. Came across Amazon, obviously, as an example of a successful company. Mm-hmm. And it was, again, doing reading and research on why. What is it about Amazon that's different? That's when I came across the letters to shareholders that Jeff Bezos started writing when they went public in 1997, and actually wrote every year up until last year, 2020, when he wrote his last letter as CEO of Amazon. And what I realized is that there was a tremendous amount of business knowledge, information, how they did it. I call it, in those letters, Bezos hid in plain sight his principles for growing Amazon. Yeah. And I realized that I thought any business should be able to use these or some variation of these principles. So that's the basis of the book. And bit of a crazy journey, but it's been fun.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. I find it so interesting that you just pulled this incredible book and idea concept out of what someone was just sending out kind of for free as they were running their business. So it's just incredible the amount of impact having a mentor of someone doing those things. You're just like, wow, you just are living your life, doing your thing. We can pull so much from it. Right. So on those, I know there's like a kind of 14 base principles, right? And you just kind of go through those. So yeah. Out of all those principles, what do you think like the biggest points are for people to start off with?
Well, I you know, so 14 is a lot, no question about that. And I've broken them down into what I call four cycles. So test, build, accelerate, and scale, which every business is going through. You know, startup certainly is more in the test phase, trying to figure out what is it that we have, what product works, all those kinds of things. But even as a business grows, different parts of the business, different products will go. So I believe they are all, you business owners are always going through these cycles. So with that said, my principle number one is called encourage successful failure. And to me, that's really interesting because I call Jeff Bezos the master of risk. Mm-hmm. because of how he uses risk strategically to grow, and how he's used it literally from when he started on his hands and knees. And I think one, it's important for people to remember, Bezos started like everybody else in a garage. I don't think everybody starts in a garage, but started small, worked himself, started adding additional people to fulfill those orders of books that people were starting to buy online. Obviously, he grew and scaled differently, but part of that is because one of his mindsets is that if you're going to invent something new, and that's what he was doing at Amazon. So 1994, the internet was brand new. Nobody quite knew what it was, but he came across a statistic that said that the internet usage was growing at 2,300% per year. And then he started asking the question, okay, what kind of business could I create that would take advantage of that? Mm-hmm. And frankly, he started with books. It's kind of what he's still known for. But he started with books because one book is exactly the same as another book. There's no differentiation there. And where the internet made him different is that he could have shelf space of a million titles versus a big box store that had maximum 150,000, maybe 175,000 books. Now, the question was, would people order online and would people wait for it to be shipped? And he's obviously answered that question.
Yeah.
So, but the idea here is in his letters, he calls Amazon the best place in the world for an employee to fail, because what he realized was experimentation is what's key. And an experiment actually means that you could fail. In fact, you're most likely going to fail. But what do you learn from that? And what can you take forward? So this idea of successful failure, which isn't a phrase you typically see together, right?
Yeah.
But this idea of experiment, 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 and then invent something new. So a whole bunch of thoughts coming through now, right? I think the whole idea of businesses need to innovate is backwards. Businesses need to experiment so they can invent something new that allows them to innovate. And so too often, even small businesses, you know, there's some fear about experimenting. I don't know if this is going to work or not. As a business grows, that becomes even more ingrained, where employees aren't necessarily afraid of failure, but they're afraid of the consequences of failure, right? What's that going to do to my career? Or if it doesn't work out, if you have the attitude, yeah, a lot's not going to work out, but we need to do more and more experiments. And in the same breath, Amazon is intolerant of incompetence. So it's not just who cares. It's very intentional experimentation, learning, repeat, and keep going that way. So that's really kind of a foundational principle for, I believe, what Amazon has been able to accomplish. And it's unlikely a business today is going to be another Amazon, but that doesn't mean they can't learn from the principles and continue to grow their business.
Exactly. So based off that was, yes, so thought out. But what I wonder on just a business level is, you say that Jeff Bezos is a master of taking risks. And then, you know, you kind of back it up with the whole point of Jeff Bezos is experiment and know you're going to fail. So do you ever think that something holding businesses back is the fact that they're like, I'm taking a risk, I'm going to fail, and I don't know if I can handle that right now at the point I'm in? So then they start stepping themselves backwards out of it. So how do you go to that risk knowing you're going to fail, but it's okay, and like move past it?
Well, the phrase that comes to mind is you protect the downside. So again, certainly as a new business, you're going to have to be smarter about what risks you can take and understand where your limitations are, you know, for the risks that you do take. And Amazon over the years has created a number of what I call success tools to help them with that process. So again, in the scale area, but it's been fascinating for me to watch as Amazon has grown. They now have about 1.6 million employees worldwide. Mm-hmm. How do you scale to that level and still maintain culture and right all those kinds of things? But one of the tools that Amazon used and Bezos put in place in 2004, so they weren't that old, they weren't that big, is what's called the six-page memo. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to do the short version of a longer story.
Yeah.
But in 2004, Bezos sent an email out to all staff that banned the use of slide presentations in any meeting, meaning PowerPoint, keynote, because he said, that's lazy thinking. And what he required in its place, and it took a number of years to kind of, again, experiment with what worked and didn't, but what he put in place is what's called a six-page memo. Mm-hmm. So if you had an idea, if you were looking for a decision on a new product, a new service, something that you were working on, you literally had to write out maximum of 6 pages of what the idea is. And it started with a future press release. What's the press release for the day this product is announced to the public? And then you work backwards from there to figure out, okay, what are the things I don't know? What are the potential downsides? What do I have to learn in order to make this possible? Mm-hmm. And then at a meeting, that's not sent out beforehand. At a meeting, literally the paper is passed out and people sit for the first 10, 15, 20 minutes and read the memo and make notes of questions they have. And then discussion is opened. So what does that do? Well, one, writing things down force you to think through in more depth than putting a bullet point on a slide. Two is it gets literally everybody on the same page. So now you don't have some people that, you know, what about this question? Well, I'm going to get that in two slides down. Wait, just hang on to that. You get rid of all that kind of stuff. And it opens up a much deeper conversation and discussion about the idea and the merits of it, as opposed to not having the information in place.
Interesting. Okay. So if you're going to take these risks, write out the risk you're going to take and then yep. move from there. And then I think you can accept whatever failures come along with it, but the whole thing itself doesn't have to be, you know, it could still move you forward, even if you have some drawbacks in that situation.
Right. And think about it. If I have that document and something in it does fail, mm-hmm. now I have something to go back to and said, what assumptions did we make that were wrong?
Yeah.
What didn't we understand? And how can we improve that, incorporate that, change that as we move forward? So it's a, you know, kind of after action review built into the process to help you mitigate risk in the future.
Exactly. So if you were going to like talk about these risks, I know there's something called like type 1 and type 2 decisions and things like yep. that. You want to read it, like kind of just talk about that for me and explain that.
Sure. Well, and that's, you know, the principles in the Accelerate, you know, how do you continue to grow? So what Bezos said is two types of decisions, as you said, type one and type two. Type one decisions are decisions that are bet the company decisions. They're big, they're hard to reverse, they're, and Bezos says you should gather as much information as you can and take as much time as you need. And ultimately, you might need to just trust your gut. That's type one. You said the problem is with most companies is that they turn type one decisions, they turn type two decisions into type one. So type two decisions are the opposite, really. Easily reversed. easily changed. And he describes it as walking through a door when you make a decision and looking around and not liking what you see. Well, a type two decision, smaller, less consequential, you can turn around, you can make another decision, you can pivot, you can literally move back. And he said the companies too often as they grow, turn type one decisions into type two process. And so think about it, a larger organization, you have bureaucracy, right? You have, I've got to go to my supervisor to get approval. I got to go to the division manager to get approval. I got to go to the regional man, you know, what all those. And he says, all that does is slow growth. Mm-hmm. And so push decisions down to the employee or group that is capable and understanding that they could make a wrong decision, but you're better off moving forward than taking too much time to question or examine or not decide and not move forward. And again, I think when you look at companies that, again, some of the examples I gave earlier, that's part of that process that put them into that slow decline that over multiple years put them out of business.
Interesting. Yeah. So like when you're thinking about Blockbuster, for example, you know, they could have moved straight into online and doing other things like that, I guess, quicker, but they didn't want to take that risk and they were making other decisions based off one decisions or type two.
And frankly, I think one of the biggest problems with successful companies is their success, because they're not willing to risk that success for something new. And in fact, Netflix went to Blockbuster and said, you should buy us for $50 million.
Yeah.
And Blockbuster's response was, why? We're the king of video rentals, until they weren't.
Exactly.
Right. And having that mindset to be able to look forward and say, you know, physical tapes or DVDs is not the future. And so if it's not the future, are we better off changing now or waiting too long, which is what they did, and not able to make the changes necessary?
Yeah. So on like that talk of just making changes and choices, if you're kind of constantly at a point where you're like, I don't want to get invested in too many other things, but I don't want to miss opportunities, do you have a good scale of when to like pay attention? Or I guess that's just so hard, because you could have an opportunity come to you and you could miss it. And then, you know, it turned out to be Netflix and you're just,
yes,
at the time, you're like, why didn't I do that? You know?
Yep. No. And there are lots of examples of that. You know, I think a couple things. One is trying to make the decision of, or be aware of, what opportunities are distractions or what opportunities are actual opportunities. I think two is, and again, Bezos talks about this, the ability to look forward. And the way he phrases it is embrace external trends. Actually, what the words he uses are eagerly embrace external trends, meaning, and the example actually he used, I think it was in the 2018 letter, example he uses is machine learning, pattern matching. That's a trend. Are you eagerly embracing it? And back to what I said earlier, are you beginning to do small experiments for what it might look like or how you might utilize it in your own business? And I think actually machine learning is a great example of that. And in large part because of Amazon and Amazon Web Services, you know, I call it the democratization of machine learning. Literally, any size business can access what only the very largest businesses could just a few years ago and make use of that technology, but figuring out how or what or how it could impact our business.
Yeah. So with the forward mindset all the time, you know, what's in the future? What's the next trend? What's doing this? How do you maintain the, I guess there's also the very cultural like, you know, we serve our customers where we have relationships with these people. When you're trying to, you know, like constantly be changing, how do you stay, I guess, the same and keep your crowd?
Well, I, you know, so one of the other principles is obsess over customers. So, and I think I've talked about this a lot, and every business has a focus on customers or they're not in business very long, mm-hmm. right? But the terms we use are customer focus, customer journey, customer experience, customer service, right? Lots of things like that. But in the very first letter, Bezos talks about obsess over customers. And I think that's a really interesting distinction. And as Amazon is throughout their career, they've done an amazing job of literally creating brand new businesses outside their core retail online shopping. AWS certainly is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. Even now, logistics, getting packages from point A to point B is another one they're building. And again, it all is part of the obsessing over customers. And so a phrase he uses a lot is we invent on behalf of the customer. Mm-hmm. And let me give you an example. I believe one of Amazon's biggest failures was the Fire Phone. Mm-hmm. So Amazon actually created a phone. They announced it in 2014. It was sort of cool, had a few interesting things, but it basically was a phone that allowed you to shop easier on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Who needed it?
Yeah.
Nobody, right? We either had an iPhone or we had an Android phone. I mean, at that point, a little late to the game, but it was Bezos' pet project. End of 2014, they wrote off $178 million in inventory and development costs.
Wow.
Big failure, right? Huge. In fact, at one point they lowered the price to 99 cents and they couldn't give it away. Yes. But again, where's the success out of all of that? Well, that team is called Lab 126, which is the hardware team where Kindle came out of, the phone came out of. And 4 months after Bezos announced the phone, he got his first demonstration for a Pringles kind of cylinder can that you could actually talk to and it would answer what we now know as Alexa and Echo, right? The hardware is Echo. Alexa's the machine learning platform. What they learned in the voice processing with the phone, they were able to translate over into the Echo. And, you know, now how many millions of people have various kinds of devices that they use every day?
Exactly. So, yeah, you just have to keep making it more to your customers' needs.
Right. Well, and working, you know, this whole idea of working back from the customer to what's the product they want. Another example is Prime. Mm-hmm. So early on, 2001, shipping was a big deal, right? Additional costs for pay for shipping. And Bezos said, you know, that's a friction point for customers. We should figure out a way to take away shipping and not charge them for shipping. Mm-hmm. And all the other senior leadership team was like, you're crazy. We make all kinds of money. It covers our costs, right? How can we do this? And what Bezos said was, if it's better for the customer, it will be better for Amazon and ultimately our shareholders. And so Bezos single-handedly put Prime in place. Oh. Free shipping. Nobody else thought it would work. Couldn't afford it, right? All those kinds of things. But he also was right that customers went to Amazon more because they knew they didn't have to worry about the shipping costs. And even today, any other business, that's always a question, right? What's shipping? Do I have to pay for it? Well, at Amazon, I'll just go to Amazon. I don't have to pay for it. And now 2 day has become 1 day, in some cases 1 hour, depending on where you're located, to be able to get those products that you you want to buy. But again, it's that customer focus and obsessing over what they really need. And it's hard to explain how much more in depth Amazon goes to try and understand the customer and not what they say they want, but what they observe that they would want if we created it.
That's interesting. Yeah. And I think people get, I think they get deterred because they're like, if I change all these things about my business, I'm going to lose the certain customer I'm serving. But in reality, you just have to find that certain customer you're serving, what you're not serving them enough of.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Interesting.
Exactly. Yep.
So that's when you're thinking about that, like, how do you, if let's say you were going to make a big change, how do you kind of, that maybe wouldn't serve your customer base that you currently have, I guess, as well, but it would add in another little crowd. How do you kind of do that? Like meshing of crowds of different types of people? Cause I feel like Amazon, everybody uses, where most companies, they're like, oh, I have my athletic people I serve. I have my,
right.
You know, how do you mesh?
Well, and I think that's grown over time as they've grown and expanded. So, you know, now they're known as the everything store, cause you can buy just about everything, you know, on there. So there's the retail piece. Now with Prime, you've got the whole Prime Video content piece with AWS touched on. You've got that whole business that actually is subsidizing to a large degree the other businesses at Amazon. And AWS started out as a solution internally for Amazon until at one point they realized, wait, there are other companies and developers that might want access to these tools that we created for ourselves. And they made them available and there was a huge market. So they identified a segment of customers completely different than the retail customers. These are developers, startups, right? All of that. And, you know, I would say Amazon, AWS certainly may be largely responsible for the boom in startup companies because it's so much less expensive. They don't have to buy servers. They don't have to buy all of that stuff that you used to before. And so they identify underserved niches or markets that they think they have a solution that they can go after.
Yeah. And they did it once they had enough money to make it a separate thing. It doesn't, like, I think a big thing I would think about if I was running my business is, oh, it's my business. So all of the things have to fall under this one umbrella. But you could have like multiple umbrellas of things that all right. kind of started with that one crowd.
Right. And when you have that multiple sources of income, right, not any one particular source, what's the word I want to use, overshadows another.
Yeah.
I think the other thing too, and again, it's principle number six, understand your flywheel, is something that Amazon did really early. So again, I'll try and do the short version of the story. The flywheel concept comes from Jim Collins' book, Good to Great. Okay. So longtime business book, actually published in October of 2001. In that book, he describes the flywheel and the doom loop. And it was really looking at what makes a company great. Well, Collins was invited by Bezos to a senior leadership team retreat, spent one whole day talking about this concept of the flywheel. And they came out of that meeting with Amazon's flywheel. So flywheel, again, big, huge, typically metal, round, right? That takes a whole lot of effort to get going. Mm-hmm. But once you get it going, it has momentum on its own or creates its own energy. At Amazon, the flywheel, certainly early in the early 2000s, was website. So they spent billions of dollars making their website easy to use. That generated word of mouth. Oh, you should go to Amazon because it's so easy. Mm-hmm. That brought more customers in. More customers coming into the website allowed Amazon to get better pricing from manufacturers because they had more volume. They added third-party sellers at that time, which brought in more inventory, more customers, and it just kept feeding that flywheel. And again, when your earlier question about, you know, customers and how do we bring them in, that's part of it, is you create systems, mechanisms, processes for bringing more customers in. Amazon early on did very little advertising. It was primarily word of mouth. Okay. And when I talk to people and I ask, have you bought something on Amazon recently? Oh, yes. Yeah. Why? It's so easy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, Amazon has spent billions of dollars making it easy, taking friction away from the customer so that they'll buy more. I mean, that's their whole goal. And I would ask business owners today, do you really understand what your customers are going through and where their friction points are? And are you actively inventing solutions to those friction points?
Interesting. Yeah. Well, awesome. That was so informational. I could probably talk about all 14 steps with you, but I appreciate everything. As a transition, different question, I just want to ask, what's one thing you can send out to people that are listening today about getting going, getting started, or even just scaling that you would say is your biggest life tips, motivational tip?
Well, again, I'll go to a principle. It's number 14. Okay. It's called believe it's always day one. This is a phrase Bezos used in every single shareholder letter, started in 1997, where he said, it's day one for the internet and for Amazon.com if we execute well. And so day one is a mindset, and it literally is when you walk into your business today, this morning, tomorrow morning, are you thinking like a startup?
Interesting.
As crazy as it might sound, employees at Amazon still think like a startup. Now, how can a startup be as big as they are? But that's part of the reason. And Bezos was asked in a all hands meeting, so all employees in a huge auditorium, they could ask him questions. And one of the questions was, Jeff, what does day two look like? And he chuckled. And then there's a YouTube video about his answer. And he chuckled and said, I think, I've been thinking about this for a long time. What he said was day two, in contrast to day one, day two is stasis, followed by irrelevance, followed by painful, excruciating decline, followed by death. And that's why it's always day one. Wow. So again, you think back to some of those big successful companies, mm-hmm. that they fall into that day two thinking. And he goes on to talk about, some things to fend off day two. One of those is that high velocity decisions. One of them is customer obsession, that you keep those front of mind so that you are able to continue to serve your customers. And if you serve your customers well, your business will do well.
Yeah, that's great. That's, I think, so impactful and such a good thought. You have to have that constantly improving mindset, because the second you stop having that, you're stuck, right? You're staying right where you're at.
Well, and I think the second you start protecting the success that got you there, that's that start of stasis, right? And you said that process could take 20 years. You could be around a long time and live off of your past success, but the end result is probably inevitable.
Yeah. And if you're not taking risks, what are you doing then?
What are you doing? Right.
Yeah. Right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. That was an incredible podcast. I learned so much, and I hope all of our audience just got as much information as possible from this. I just have one last thing. How do we reach out to you? How do we find what you're doing? How do we see what you're up to?
Sure. So the book website is thebezosletters.com.
Okay.
And so there's more information there. If you happen to read the book, there's some worksheet material just to help you actually apply. For me, it's not just theory. It's okay, how do we use this? LinkedIn is my primary platform. So you connect with me on LinkedIn, tell me that you heard me on the podcast, and I'd be glad to connect with you.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm sure they all will. And thank you so much for being on my podcast today. I appreciated every second of it. And I hope you guys tune in next time for our next one. And like I said, got a ton of notes out of this event. So we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you learned something. If you have questions, email us at info@thelocalcrown.com. And if you want to get featured in our publication, Inside the Empire, alongside John Lee Dumas, the Entrepreneur on Fire, Jason Waller, the CEO of Power Home Solar, Sharon Lecter, Dan Caldwell, the man that started Tap Out, and the limitless man himself, Jim Quick, for free, then head over to thelocalcrown.com/become a contributor.